Hello and welcome back to the Second City podcast with me, Callum Byrne.
And me, Daniel Skitchley.
We've got another huge bumper edition coming up. Obviously, Villa were in a dramatic Europa Conference League quarterfinal on Thursday. Dan went to New York in Rotherham on Saturday. And then I was at Villa Park on Sunday for Aston Villa versus Bournemouth. We've got a few little bits of housekeeping here and there, as always. But first, Dan, I know I saw you yesterday, but for everyone who's listening and watching at home, how was your week been? And how was your day yesterday, I suppose?
Fine, I guess. Do you mean Saturday when you say yesterday? Because I went to Rotherham on Saturday.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
Yeah, sure.
And yesterday as well, because I did see you.
Oh, sorry, yeah, so, sorry.
Like, maybe like your afternoon after I saw
got
you.
Got you. Yes, absolutely fine. I went straight to work after I met up with you. Not bad at all. Yeah, we caught up for a meet up in town yesterday. You were in Birmingham for the Villa game. Because obviously Cal, for those who don't know, Cal lives down in Wickham now, so it's quite hard for us to like. This is a cross-city podcast these days, ironically. Mm-hmm. But yes, no, not bad at all. How about you? You must have had a good afternoon at Villa Park.
A very lovely day at Villa Park, and one of the rare occasions where I've got the train up to Birmingham to go to the football, and instead of queuing at Aston Station for like 4 years of my life to get back to town, I decided to walk back. The sun was out, it was really warm, so I had a really lovely walk all the way back to town in the evening, and just caught the end of Coventry's FA Cup semi-final on the platform. But
what are we saying about that? I like, obviously it's quite funny, I don't mind that they lost, but I mean, if that was me, it kind of was us on Saturday, but on nowhere near the scale that Coventry went through, having a goal chalked off. I mean, what they went through, I would be livid if I was
I'd be heartbroken by it. But I would also say, if it was the other way around and Man United had scored and had the goal disallowed, would there be as much outrage?
Probably not. I think the penalty that Coventry got was quite lucky, personally. Like, it was a handball.
Yeah. Across both semi-finals, there was one given and one not.
So. Yeah. No, I would be... I just think it would have been genuinely the best FA Cup semi-final ever.
Yeah.
Like, if it had been that fourth goal had been given. But anyway, with the Second City podcast, not the... whatever City Coventry are in there.
Yeah.
Manchester.
Well, they were briefly in the Second City for a few years.
They were, that's true. Yeah, that's true. They are West Midlands, I suppose. Cool. But as Cal says, we got loads to get through. Couple of Villa games, Blues, huge game at Rotherham. So, but shall we get into what we're wearing first, as we always do?
Absolutely. I was split between two kits this week. Obviously, one to do with the events that may have happened on Thursday, but I stuck with my guns. This one I'd earmarked particularly for this week. So what are we saying, Dan?
Okay. As a preview, I've been getting a bit of stick for how accurate I am at these from some Blues fans. So I've been thinking about deliberately getting it wrong, but I don't know if I've got that in me. So there's something specific to this week then. 32 red, home shirt.
Yeah.
So Nike sponsor.
Yeah, Claret and Blue home, Nike, 32 red. The old 32 red logo where they actually had the suits of a deck of cards on.
Yeah.
And there's this really weird transfer on the bottom.
Oh yeah, AVFC.
That's come off straight off word art, hasn't it?
Oh yeah, it's terrible. Yeah, that's awful. It's O'Neill era.
Yeah.
I'm gonna say 06, 07 would be my guess.
Your streak has come to an end, Dan, but you're
oh, thank God.
Out.
Is it 07 or 08?
It's 07 or 08, yeah.
Okay, I'm fine with that. Yeah, I'm fine with it getting it wrong.
So this is Martin O'Neill's second season in charge. And it's because, Dan, on the weekend just gone in 2008, Aston Villa beat Birmingham City by 5-1 at Villa Park in this shirt.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. I should know because you weren't there, as we were talking about yesterday. You, your dad didn't let you go, or you had like, not that he didn't let you go, but you had like football to play or something that day. You were
saying. Sunday league football, yeah.
But
I
did go to that game.
You did. You were in the away end.
I was in the away end. It was my first away game ever. Never been to an away game before that. And I was 10. I think I was 10. Yeah, 2000. And, yeah, oh, nearly 11. Yeah, and we lost 5-1. It was awful. Yeah, it was awful. It was a shame as well because I was so. I think I only found out like last minute that I was going as well, or like the day before maybe. And for me, like, you know, especially when you're like primary school age, to be going to like Villa away, I was like, you know, I was like the only kid in school who was going to the game at all.
You're like hard as nails in primary school if you did like the second city derby away.
And I think a lot of people thought I was lying and stuff, but I was making it up that I was going, but I did go. And I remember we were 2-0 down at half time, weren't we? I think we were 4-0 down when we scored. I remember at half time, like even as a 10-year-old, we were 2-0 down at half time, and I was like, oh, why not? Like, you know, even as a kid, as a naive 10-year-old, I was like, I just can't see us getting anything here. But yeah, I've never actually been to Villa Park since, actually. It's the only time I've been. Ever.
Well, I've never been to St Andrews. So.
No, fair enough. As I've got older, it's so hard to get tickets. Like, I've never been able to. Got very lucky then. But yeah.
Yeah, in terms of the season, obviously a very good season under Martin O'Neill. We finished sixth in the Premier League. Obviously, we got knocked out in the third round of both domestic cups. But one of my favourite players of the era, John Carew, was our top goal scorer in the league and across all competitions with 13. It's when we really started to see some of the spending that Martin O'Neill would do during his tenure as Aston Villa manager. So we saw the likes of Nigel Riococca, Marlon Harewood, Zat Knight, Mustafa Salifu, and the ever-forgettable Wayne Routledge all come in. I mean, none of them really lit it up in an Aston Villa shirt, it's fair to say. We also loaned in Scott Carson and initially Curtis Davis. I think that one went on to be permanent.
Curtis Davis? We signed him a few years later.
Yeah. Yeah, so he came in from West Bromwich Albion as a loan. It was a really good season, but we started to see some of the young players that had come up through the academy and some that had won the FA Youth Cup for us were moved out at this time. The likes of Liam Ridgewell, Stephen Davis, Lee Hendry, and the worst one probably of all of them, Gary Cahill. We sold him to Bolton for £5 million and he went on to be one of England's best centre-backs of our generation, probably fair to say. Captain Chelsea to a Premier League title. So, but all in all, a very good season. We had a great, this is like peak Martin O'Neill Villa. The squad was just amazing. You know, the likes of prime Ashley Young, Gareth Barry, John Carew, Stylian Petrov, like, oh, just amazing. Yeah, those were good. Those were very, very, very good days. And it's only now we're eclipsing those days in our generation. So, yeah, things would go on to be better under Martin O'Neill and then come crashing down at the end. But the kit as well, it was the first of our Nike kits. So I think the Hummel one, our last Hummel one the year before, is an awful kit. Terrible, terrible kit. And so this one I really quite like. And yeah, nice. This is 07-08.
Nice. I was going to say on the Gary Cahill thing, we were linked to him as well to buy him. I think it might have been from Bolton a couple of years later. But I remember as a kid, I was like, oh, well, he scored against us a couple of years ago. He scored that mad goal against us. And I was like, I remember McLeish, I think he said publicly that he wanted him. And I was like, no, don't want him. And then, yeah.
That was like me with Heskey, that was.
Oh, well, at least Heskey was like on the way down. Gary Cahill was a couple of years later, was playing at the World Cup for England in Brazil, or a few years later anyway.
Just to think, Dan, there's an alternative universe out there where Blues around that era signed Gary Cahill and Gareth Bale.
Yeah. I think the Bale one, you do hear about that. And there's another, and we also probably signed Alex Song and John Terry much later on as well. In another life somewhere. And Robbie Keane. But yeah. Yeah, it's very good. What do you think I'm wearing then?
Now this is retro.
Like, yeah.
What's the kit make? Pony?
Pony, they're called. Yes. If you ever heard of them.
Blimey. Another auto windscreens. Would you call this one a penguin kit?
Yeah, absolutely.
But with a collar. I recognize this shirt mostly because when we did our Second City story on Steve Bruce, I believe I used the picture of him wearing this shirt in the thumbnail. Yep.
Good knowledge.
So I can't remember the year though, but I recognize the shirt. I could picture the image I used of Steve Bruce wearing this shirt for Blues. Yeah. So it's probably mid 90s. So I was trying to think. So he started managing in general around the late 90s. So this must be around like 1993, maybe, 94.
Yeah, a few years out. Yeah, a few years out, but I also thought this was around that time, despite the Bruce photo. This is 97, 98. Yeah, so it's a penguin made by Pony, and the badge is sort of is in like a weird...
It's a shield, like a silhouette shield.
Yeah, so it's like shaped like the badge. And yeah, Auto Windscreen's a sponsor. I actually think it's a lovely kit. I actually think it's wicked. I really like the collar. Yeah, I think it's wicked. Shout out to James for loaning me this one this week.
It's another one you could see a modern remake of, for definitely.
Yeah, and obviously we've kind of done little bits with the penguin and stuff, done a few penguins since, but it'd be cool if they brought like the collar back and everything. Don't you think as well, this Pony kit name, I've never heard of them otherwise, but it's very
never heard of them.
I think it adds to like the retro feel, even just the font is very like 80s. I know this is a 90s kit, but it's very like retro and everything, very old school.
You wouldn't see like a modern kit maker logo like that.
No,
like not even Macron, right? Macron anymore. They just have like the like person thing.
Yeah, well, it's kind of a thing in general, isn't it? Across the world, like logos now are so minimalist and like everything is just, if you look at like the Pringles logo, even from like 10 years ago to now, it's like way more like minimal, like far more minimalist. But yeah, 97, 98. So, so we were born in 97. So this would have been the first kit released, I guess, apart from maybe the away of the same season in our lifetimes for Blues. Pretty cool. This year, so Trevor Francis was the manager, I believe. Yes, he was. So Blues, we got to the fifth round of the FA Cup and were eliminated by Leeds. And we got to the third round of the League Cup and were eliminated by Arsenal. Here's the mad thing about this season, though. So we finished seventh. So we missed out on the playoffs by 1 point. By one place, I should say. But we were level on points with Sheffield United, who finished sixth. Here's the mad thing, though. So we were level on points. But back in them days, it didn't go to goal difference next. It went to goals scored. I don't know if this was like in the Premiership as well, but at least in the First Division as we were in at the time. To clarify, this was like the First Division, what is now the Championship. We had a plus 10 better goal difference than Sheffield United, but we finished below them because it instead went to goals scored. Which is mental. Like, how does that make any sense? Yeah. I don't know when that changed. So that's incredibly harsh. So we finished seventh on goals scored, and we had a better goal difference than them. That's absolutely crazy to me. That's wild.
It's like in UEFA competitions, it goes to head-to-head rather than goal difference.
Yeah, I suppose at least with that, because it's such a compressed group and you only play each other like a couple of times, maybe it prompts teams to go for it a bit more against each other. But yeah, I thought this was absolutely wild. It went to goals scored instead. But yeah, so we finished seventh anyway. Paul Furlong was the top scorer this season. Some players we brought in, Peter Underlovu, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, for 1.6 million, which back in them days was an awful lot of money for Blues. And John McCarthy came in from Port Vale for £1.5 million. And the legend and personal favourite of yours from your time sort of working together, Dele Adebola came in for £1 million from Peru Alexandra. Darren Purse came in for 700 grand as well, who was a very popular figure at Blues. He came in the February of 1998. And then do you remember Tony Cotty was he was a pundit, I guess, on Sky Sports.
He was on Sky Soccer Saturday.
Yeah, yeah. A reporter on Soccer Saturday. He came in on a 1 month loan from Leicester in November 1997. A couple of highlights from this year. We started the season really well. We were unbeaten in the first five games and were sitting second in mid September. And we did the double over Wolves that year and we beat West Brom in the home game as well. So the only derby that we really lost was West Brom away. And as I mentioned, this was the first kit that was released in like our lifetime. So the first competitive Blues match in my lifetime would have been the first game of this season, and we beat Stoke City 2-0 at home on the 9th of August 1997. So I was a day shy of a month old, and that put us top of the league after one game. So even like, I don't know if all the games that weekend have been played, but that put us top after that result. So that's quite nice. Blues were top of the league when I was born, technically, like sort of. But
things had never been so good.
Yeah, the only way was down from there. But we also this season, it wasn't in this kit. It was the reverse fixture against Stoke, which I think was in the January. We randomly went and beat them 7-0 at the Britannia, which is pretty remarkable. You don't see that too often in the Championship these days, despite some mad results. So yeah, it seemed like a really unlucky season to miss out on the playoffs and stuff, but obviously it would only be a few more years and we'd be in the Premier League eventually. So yeah, 97-98 home is this one.
Wonderful, wonderful stuff. Shall we dive into the games? And I mean, we've got to talk about Thursday night. Where Villa shithouse their way into a European semi-final. Their first European semi-final since 1982. Yeah, we don't deserve to be in a European semi-final, I don't think.
No.
But
no.
We'll take it.
Yeah. I was watching this game in I was in O'Neill's in Broad Street. Well, I went with one of our mates to get some food, and then we were like, I should go for a beer in O'Neill's. And we completely forgot the Villa game was the early game. And then we walked in, it was just full of Villa fans. We're like, oh, we messed up here big time. So we were keeping a low profile while the game was on.
So when we were in extra time, I was watching it in a bar in Chiswick because I just walked straight out of work and into the pub. And like, so we're in extra time, stressing quite a lot. There's a weird, there was about maybe five or six of the Villa fans in there. And all of a sudden a Liverpool fan walks in and goes, oh, are you guys watching this? Can I put the Liverpool game on? I'm like, no, you bloody well can't.
Yeah.
No like, chance. We've been here for 95 minutes and you're already out. No.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Like, oh, just
living in a different world. Some people don't.
I know. But yeah, I mean, we weren't very good on the night. Lille were absolutely fantastic and they really sort of did a number on us. They got quite an early goal. The one thing I really was conscious about last week, and I think I said it on the podcast, is don't let an early goal in. And when we'd come out of Villa Park after the first leg and we'd let a late goal in, I remember some of the players saying if the atmosphere was a bit flat and, you know, we'd still won the game and that. But I think there was a... There was just a feeling, I think, coming out of Villa Park in general that maybe the momentum or the tie, you know, winning the game 2-0 as opposed to 2-1 had changed the momentum in the tie, possibly. And the fact that we don't keep many clean sheets as well, the chances are we weren't going to go away to Lille and keep a clean sheet. And so obviously we've let a late goal in the first tie and let an early goal in, and the tie is completely level after about 20 minutes of the second leg. But we really just couldn't get into the game. We lost Nicolò Zaniolo very early on in the game. And he was then missing again on Sunday. So I don't know how bad his injury is. But I always felt that we'd probably score in the game at some point. But hope started to run out pretty quickly. We went 2-0 down in the second half. The smallest player on the pitch has scored a header from a corner. Another set-piece goal, which is really, really disappointing. And it was weird, I think. You know, we've been knocked out of cup games before and it's been really stressful. But we were heading towards stoppage time. And I think we were so not in the game and been so poor that there was, I'd almost resigned myself to the fact we were going to get knocked out. And so I wasn't particularly stressed. It was more of like, I was hopeful, but sort of accepted that we were probably going to get knocked out. And then out of nothing, Ollie Watkins has put like a looping ball into the box. John Duran has gone to head it. The goalkeeper's caught it. And as he's come down, he's clattered into his own player, dropped it. A shot's hit off the defender on the floor, and it's come out to Matty Cash, who just smacks it into the top corner. And all of a sudden, we're level again. And the game goes to extra time. And we really, really didn't deserve it. And yet, we should have won the game in extra time. We had two really good chances in extra time. Douglas Luiz in particular basically had an open goal with a header from a rebounded shot. And I just think he probably already thought he'd scored before he heads the ball, because he just heads it towards the goalkeeper, and the goalkeeper makes a brilliant save, not taking anything away from him, because it is a top class save from a goalkeeper that was really, really good on the night. But I do what, but it's one of those, it's a great save, but he should have scored.
Yeah.
And then John Duran had a chance with the very last kick of the game in extra time, to send it to penalties. It kind of looked like we were playing for penalties a bit in the second half of extra time, bar that great chance right at the end. And all hell broke loose, but Emi Martinez, being the penalty shootout king that he is, somehow got us through into the semi-final.
So, and should, like, let's get into it. This bizarre yellow card rule. So he was booked in the first half for time wasting, right? First half, was it?
Yeah. So so you'll notice it a lot if you watch us. You probably don't, but when the way we tend to play, and we did it a lot yesterday against Bournemouth as well, is we'll like take the short goal kick, or the ball will come back to Emi Martinez, and he won't do anything with it. He'll try and draw the opposition in so we can play through the press or go over the top of the press. And teams have started, as the season's gone on, cottoned on to that's what we try to do, so they don't press us. And especially in Europe, I remember that there was a point in the RZ home game where like he was on the ball for about 40 seconds and nothing happened. And the referee, I mean, we'll get into the referee. I think he might have maybe thought the ball was in play, or he was time wasting or something. So when the next goal kicks rolled around, he's maybe like taken 5 seconds extra just to slow the game down, take a bit of the sting out, and he's booked in for time wasting. We're losing the game. Okay, fine, whatever. I mean, the referee in general had I don't know what you think. I thought he was awful for both teams. The amount of yellow cards for nothing challenges.
Yeah, and then, as I said, we were watching it like in the pub. We didn't have a great view of the screen. You kind of can't hear the commentary that clearly. Like, we were having a beer and stuff when it was on. Like, you know, it wasn't like the optimum viewing conditions, but even we could tell the ref wasn't having a great game. He was very card happy, but then he would like bottle it in the big moments as well. I felt like, you know, he was happy to flash it in the first half and whatever in the second half, but then as the game went further on, he I don't know, didn't have that conviction as the game went on. But yeah, he
probably, because he booked to lose so control. Many players,
exactly, he seemed to lose control of the game a little bit.
And because he was like it for both teams as well, all it did was feed into the atmosphere for the home fans, because it was just as bad for them as it was for us. You can imagine how that just gets the crowd up and whips up the atmosphere. It just makes it even worse. And then in the shootout, then Emi Martinez makes a brilliant save from the first penalty from Benteleb, who then punts the ball into the crowd, doesn't get booked for kicking the ball away. And obviously in classic Emi Martinez, like, you know, he was getting dog's abuse for 120 minutes because he won the World Cup for Argentina. And so he's shushing the fans and the referee, and then he ends up asking for the ball and he gets booked for asking for the ball. I do think he was asking for the ball at that point, but maybe he did overstep the mark a bit. I don't know. I think he just annoyed the referee so much when he started asking the lino for the ball, it all hell broke loose. But yeah, I didn't know about this rule. He was probably lucky. But then we saw in the semi-final yesterday, Onana and the Coventry City goalkeeper both got booked in the shootout, having already been booked, because they knew that they could just do some weird stuff. So this rule is going to get changed almost certainly.
Yeah, that's it. So yeah, the rule being that a yellow card doesn't carry over into the penalty shootout. I find it really strange.
Yeah, because it stays on his record. So he's suspended for the first leg of the semi-final.
So it was a stupid thing to do still. So it was still a stupid thing to do, because now he can't play against Olympiacos in the first game, right?
He'd have been banned anyway because he'd been booked in the first leg for time wasting. So when he got booked in the first half, I think he was suspended regardless. So
he basically just got a free yellow card. It was a free hit yellow card.
Yeah.
It's why it's a strange thing to include, because you either don't have it and they therefore will be more conscious of it, and they probably won't, like, say there, he probably wouldn't overstep the mark because he knows under the yellow and a half. But because he knows it exists, you're basically just giving them a free chance to, you know, throw some antics and try and, you know, put the opposition off or whatever. Strange rule. And in the where we were watching as well, because you couldn't really hear the commentary and people didn't really, we saw him show the yellow card and we were like, oh my God.
I mean,
I'll
be honest, TNT's commentary was dreadful. They didn't have a clue what was going on.
Oh, yeah.
They thought he'd been sent off.
We were all like, oh, you know, he's off, and then he just kept playing, and we had no like context for what was going on. It was really bizarre because we're never in a million years where we like we're, the only thing we could think of was, do you remember the 2006 World Cup when your man got booked three times? Yeah. That's the only thing I could think of in comparison. Like he just must have forgot or something. Like,
yeah, but the thing is with penalties, just in general, is that they're so geared towards the attacker that, like, I don't mind goalkeepers trying doing a few antics here and there. Maybe when in the World Cup final, when Emi Martinez like lobbed the ball away for Tchouaméni and then he went and missed his penalty, that was probably overstepping it. But I don't mind goalkeepers having to try and, because penalties are so geared up for the attacker to score and you need someone to miss in the end. So I don't mind a bit of goalkeeper shithousery, really.
No, sure.
But alas, he saved the final penalty. We won the game. We didn't deserve it. And it's, you know, having watched the World Cup where Emi Martinez was the hero for Argentina and saved, basically won them two matches, the quarterfinal and the final in a penalty shootout, it's nice and satisfying that he's actually been able to do it for us as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That was a night that got more stressful the longer the game went on. But we're through. In terms of a grade, I can only grade it a D. We were so bad.
Oh, wow, really?
It's one of the best European nights in the club's history. But in terms of a performance, the performance level was really poor. We lost, drew, and won all in the same night. So if we're just going excluding the penalty shootout, it's a D. Man of the match is obviously Emi Martinez. The penalty shootout was an A star. Loved it. Barred the yellow card. Yeah. Loved it. But yeah, and my three-word match review will be world's number one.
Fair enough. Nice tribute to John Ruddy there. or Lee Camp. Nice tribute to Save Fans, Lee Camp there. I would have thought just for like, I can understand why you gave it a D, like you justified it there, obviously. But I think just for the showing, if that was Blues, like just the character to get through it almost, I think. And, you know,
that's
come back
fair.
From, because I agree, in like the 90 minutes, Leo was so much better. Just to have the character to get through it. And then you had huge chances in extra time where you arguably could have won it even then. So I understand your logic, but yeah, fair enough.
And it's like a split grade.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, head, heart and head, two separate things, sort of.
Yeah. Anyway, how was your trip to New York, Dan?
New York was great. I went last July. It was beautiful. Let's talk about that instead.
No, you went to New York in Rotherham.
I went to the ASEAL, how do you say it? ASEAL? New York Stadium in Rotherham. The sponsor, ASEAL, however you say it. yeah, first of all, of course, first things first. Sure, a lot of people heard about this. Obviously, the game stopped after about 10 minutes because someone in the crowd, I believe, had a heart attack, and the game was stopped for about half an hour. Hope everything's okay. Obviously, things far more important than football. Hope they don't really know what happened after, obviously. But hope everything's okay, and they're pulling through and so on. It was quite chilling being there and like in a stadium of just quiet people, and you could sort of, like, you try and not look, but you could see, like, you know, like the medical staff crowding around them and like police and so on. It's really quite chilling to see. But yeah, obviously in these situations, like sort of the medical staff and the stewards and the police do like an amazing job to give them the best chance and to like get them out safely, which they did. And sort of, so yeah, of course, far more important than football. So I hope everything's okay there. And it was a bit strange actually, because it meant that we didn't get to, there was then 10 minutes of stoppage time at the end of the first half as well. So it meant we didn't get to half time till half four. Again, obviously in the grand scheme of things, not that any of this matters. It was just a bit of a strange occasion, but yeah, hope everything's okay. The game itself, we, I don't know, maybe you giving like your performance a D as you beat Lille in a European quarterfinal, I find slightly offensive, because we played Rotherham away and drew 0-0. Rotherham, I think I said on here last week, Rotherham only needed a point for the rest of the season to beat their tally in 2016-17, which was their worst ever championship points tally. They only needed one point to beat that. Obviously, Blues provided that point. we drew 0-0. Yeah. I'm kind of still a bit speechless, which isn't great for a podcast.
You played Rotherham twice this year, one of the worst championship teams we've ever seen.
Yeah.
You've drawn both games and not scored a goal.
Not yet. If we go down, which after the Coventry game, I was like, we'll do it now. We'll stay up now. Yeah, we got it. And I know I said on here last week about, like, you know, there's upsides to going down and it could be fun. I still think that. But what makes it so irritating is that there's no excuse for these players to go down. You know, we played a really good I know Coventry probably had one eye on the FA Cup, but we played a very good Coventry team and we battered them. And then a week later, we played a far worse team. I know Steve Evans. So Steve Evans has just gone back to Rotherham and he obviously set them up to frustrate and get a scrappy draw, and you know, fair enough. But yeah, we were poor, man. We were so poor. And I know the first half maybe had the whole thing of they played 10 minutes and then they had to stop and then they had to come out and do another warm-up and then they had to play the rest of the first half, and so it probably was very disjointed. But it's the same for the Rotherham players, you know, there's no excuse. Yeah, it was really, really poor. We were on 45 points at the start of the day and everyone's sort of saying we're probably going to need 49-50 to stay up. And three of them should have came against Rotherham because we got Huddersfield away this weekend who are right down there with us. They've got so much to play for still. They're not good, but they've got a lot to play for. Norwich could still be fighting for a playoff spot on the last day. Rotherham had nothing to play for and they at times controlled the ball a lot better than us. In possession for a lot of the first half, I thought they looked a lot more comfortable than us. We showed no composure whatsoever for the first half. And missing like huge chances, like Tyler Roberts has improved a lot lately, but he missed a huge chance before the incident with the fan. So we can't blame like his headspace or anything. He missed a very clear chance down the opposite end to us. And then like Koji Miyoshi missed a huge chance in like the last minute, which Bielik threaded through to him. And then obviously we did score after about 75-80 minutes. Jay Stansfield's got a wicked goal. So it was a free kick and it's gone in and been headed back towards Stansfield near the edge of the box. And it's just sort of hit him and he's responded really well to let it bounce and then smack it in. And it was right into the corner and that was right in front of us. And we're all going ballistic. Like it was absolute limbs. It was really like pretty mad. And even I'm sure you saw there was like a small pitch invasion as well by a few fans. So that must be quite embarrassing when you then realise that the goal's offside because Buchanan was technically in like the keeper's field of view, sort of.
Yeah, I don't know if it makes you feel better, but if you'd have scored that goal in the Premier League or the FA Cup semi-final, it would have been ruled out as well. It is offside, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'd rather it be offside than be onside. And you know, if it's been ruled out, I'd rather it actually be offside. But it was mad because we were celebrating what felt like ages before we realised the flag was up. There was no, you know, sometimes you look straight away and you're like, well, you know, that might be offside. It's a shame because it was a wicked goal from Stansfield as well. And that
It's a great finish.
Yeah, it's a great finish. And he, by the way, I'm going to criticise the players quite a lot in this, but he, as ever, worked tirelessly. He's going to be our player of the season. He was obviously works his backside off. This season, obviously, has been a disaster. And like after the Coventry game, we were back up to 21st. Like, it's all in our hands now. We're playing two teams that are below us between now and the end of the season. We really should stay up now. And we blew it this weekend. We should have won that game. Instead, we drew 0-0. And then Sheffield Wednesday won the next day. So we're back in the relegation zone now. And now I'm like, if we do stay up, it's almost certainly going to go to the last day now. It's going to be a really tense survival Saturday, which, you know, can be kind of fun, but I'd rather not go through it. If it has a happy conclusion, it's good. But you can only, like, some weird decisions have been made this year, but Rooney left nearly 5 months ago. These players cannot keep blaming things like that. They can't keep blaming managerial changes. They were playing a shit team, let's be honest. And Rotherham were bad as well. They were bad on Saturday. And we still can't break them down. These players can't keep blaming managers, and someone like Rowett can only guide them. He can't. He's not out there kicking the ball with them. Having said that, I've found some of Rowett's selection. I love Rowett, but obviously the decision to start Ollie Burke raised more than a few eyebrows. That was absolutely bizarre. So Burke he's not very good. He's not, in my opinion, he's not a championship standard footballer. He's probably a lower League One player, in my opinion. He had a he hasn't played for us since January. He hasn't played a minute, and I know he's been injured, but Mowbray didn't seem interested in playing him at all. And then out of nowhere, he started the game on the right wing, and we were in the bar beforehand and saw the team news come out, and there was just no one could really believe it. And obviously,
I'd also question
he got hooked
a motivational
at
thing with him as well.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's going to leave at the end of the season, go back to Werder Bremen. And he, yeah, obviously he got taken off at halftime because he was having a shocker. And I don't agree. Some fans were like, he had such a bad first half. Some of the fans were booing him, which I don't agree with, booing your own player under really any circumstance. But certainly not just because they're having a bad game. But equally, he got taken off at halftime and we still couldn't find a way through. So he can't. I find there's been a lot of attention on him specifically. And I'm like, well, he got taken off at halftime and we still didn't do anything for the whole game, you know, for the rest of the game. So yeah, just really frustrating. And momentum's really not with us at the minute. And Sheffield Wednesday got a huge result away at Blackburn the next day. Sheffield Wednesday are on a bit of a... I know they're inconsistent, but they've picked up some huge results since New Year. You consider how far adrift they were in like October, November time.
They were like 10 points adrift, weren't they?
Yeah, they were like rock bottom for ages. No. Yeah, they were worse than Rotherham for the first half of the season, probably. Yeah, it was... I don't know if you've seen their goal, their third goal as well.
Yeah.
Their keeper's had a probably even worse than the Enkelman one, isn't it? The ball's come back to him and
at least with like the Enkelman one, like he's gone to trap the ball.
Yeah.
And it's just gone under him. It's a terrible mistake, don't get me wrong. But this one, he's just took a swing at it and just missed it.
Yeah, like, and like
it's almost like the Rob Green one for England against the USA, but it doesn't bobble.
Yeah, sure. But his slice almost took it. It almost changed the direction of the ball towards the goal. And then I know it's different watching it, excuse me, in slow motion, but it looked like he almost could have stopped it still as well. And he still didn't react quick enough. Anyway, my point being, Sheffield Wednesday have got like luck on their side. They've got a bit of momentum, bit of feel good factor. They truly believe they're staying up now. And I think it'll be 2 from 3 with us, Huddersfield and Sheffield Wednesday. And I think Huddersfield will go. So I think it's us or Sheffield Wednesday. And that's, you know, they're two clubs that shouldn't be in League One. But I think one of us will be. I don't know. I trust Rowett to get us through these two games, and hopefully, I do think he's the man. If anyone can do it to get us out of this, but we did not help ourselves, man. I just don't know what we were playing at, honestly. On a side note, the Rotherham Stadium is quite a nice little stadium. Yeah. On a side note, but yeah, frustrating, man. For a grade, I'd give it an E, and that's only because we didn't lose. Might seem harsh because we drew, but I'd argue it's lucky not to get an F because we absolutely should have won that game, and we failed at that. Man of the match, I'll give to Joe Stansfield just for his work rate, and obviously he scored a goal that was a really great finish that unfortunately couldn't stand, but he gives everything every game, and I really like him. He's a really good... I question the character of some of these players a lot this season, but... because they're good players as well. But Stansfield's a player whose character I've never questioned at all. I think he's a future captain of wherever he ends up. I think he's outstanding. And my three-word match review was... I don't know. I don't know. It's just...
It's three words.
Something. Four-word match review. Prepare for Survival Saturday, because that's what it's going to be. It's going to go to the last game, 100%. I think mathematically we could get relegated this weekend, but let's not think about that. Grim times. Should we move on to... You were back at Villa Park. Obviously, I saw you yesterday, and you were going to the Villa game against Bournemouth on at Villa Park.
Yeah, I mean, there's something really nice when you get to, like, at the start of the season and when you get into the running. But it's like either side of the clock change when, like, even at your 3 o'clock kickoffs, the sun is out, it's warm, you come out of the stadium and it's like still sunny and you're not even near dusk. There's just something really nice about that, especially then if you go on to win the game. There's just like, it's just all good vibes. Really good to be back at Villa Park, up at the top of the Holt End, which I haven't been. That's up there since the Arsenal game at home. That atmosphere was brilliant. Before the game, especially when Emi Martinez came out, there was a lot of big chants and big cheers for him after his heroics midweek. I think we were all expecting us to have a little bit of tired legs, obviously, with the amount of injuries we've had this year, I was expecting quite a bit of rotation on Sunday. I thought Carlos and Longley for two would come in, and neither of them did. But I think the only real change, we only made two changes, which is obviously Douglas Luiz came out because he was still suspended, and Zaniolo came out because he got injured. But he didn't really play much on Thursday anyway. So it's only really one change from the team that played the majority of the game on Thursday night. And the work rate from every single one of those players across the Bournemouth game was just absolutely fantastic. There wasn't a single bad performance in there. They worked so hard. They were like, you wouldn't have guessed they played 120 minutes plus penalties on Thursday night. I mean, the work rate from the front four, especially Diaby, Bailey, Watkins, and Morgan Rogers, they were just absolutely exceptional. We did go a goal behind. Matty Cash makes a poor challenge. It's a penalty. It's one of those where, like, you're in the ground and, like, nobody appeals against the ref. Like, the referee points to the spot and the ground is silent because everyone knew it was a penalty. I don't really know what happened. He kind of got caught marking two players. He got caught being in a 2-on-1. And as the ball gets played to the second player, because he's had to keep an eye on he was trying to get onto the first one, he's out of position then. And so he's sort of chasing shadows and he just sort of dives in. And it's not his leading leg. It's the one that's trailing behind him, just clips the player, brings him down. Very good penalty from Dominic Solanke. And then he did goad the Villa fans at the whole end, which is fair enough. You know, we'd love it if it was the other way around. A player that, if we're taking three strikers to the Euros, should be going ahead of Ivan Toney.
Yeah, 100%. I agree. Yeah.
Regardless, so I think there was a little bit of nervousness coming through. Obviously, I said to you yesterday that game was a real potential banana skin because Bournemouth are a really good team. Their league position doesn't show it because they were winless in the opening 10, and they were a team that could have easily gone to Villa Park and got a result with us playing on Thursday night. For 120 minutes plus penalties in a very emotional and draining night. Our reaction was very, very good. Morgan Rogers scores a wonderful solo goal, his second goal in the Villa shirt. It's for a player that is just getting better and better each week, and I can't wait to see the heights that he can reach under Unai Emery. For £8 million from Middlesbrough, he's looking like, you know, if we sold him in the summer, he's going for £35 million now. Like, and I'm sure Middlesbrough fans would be wishing they still had him when they're seeing, you know, I mean, he must feel like he's hit the jackpot. He went to Borough for £1 million from Man City's academy in the summer, and now he's playing for a Villa team that's fighting for Champions League and in a European semi-final. Like, what an insane season he's had. And he got to the semi-finals of the Carabao Cup for Middlesbrough. Like, it's one of those where, like, he probably can't believe the year he's had. Second half, we came out, and while maybe Bournemouth have been pretty good in the first half, especially in some of the early stages, they never really had a kick in the second half. We were very, very good, very dominant. Again, for the fact that we've got no number six, no defensive midfielders, Youri Tielemans and John McGinn across this and the Arsenal game have been absolutely outstanding. And Youri Tielemans has become an absolute joy to watch this year. Like, you know, back in the days on Sky Sports, they used to have player cam and it'd just be a camera that tracked one player for 90 minutes. And if you clicked the red button, you could just watch. You'd basically just be watching this one player. I would watch player cam for Youri Tielemans. Like, the vision he has and some of the passes and through balls he puts through are just absolutely audacious. Like, we picked him up for nothing in the summer just gone. It took him a while to settle in, but my God, he's become an amazing player for us this year. We worked really hard. We counter-attacked from a corner, I think. Ollie Watkins gets through, keeps his head, slots through. A lovely through ball for Moussa Diaby, 2-1. Relief throughout the stadium. Some very good limbs in the whole end. And then later on, same sort of thing. Watkins gets fed through. And I think he tries to shoot, but it's sort of like a through ball-y shot as he goes round the goalkeeper and Leon Bailey makes it 3. And we were completely out of sight then at that point. Bournemouth had a couple of chances late on, which might have made it a bit more harum scarum if they'd have scored, but otherwise we pretty much controlled the game. Like I said, there was no bad performances there from where I was. A couple of tired legs out there. I mean, the amount of I don't want to moan, and I don't want to be one of those fans that moan. But the people that moan and groan at Matty Cash do my head in. The guy's had a really good season, bar like a little wobble in the middle. He's been injured since the last international break. He came back on Thursday night, played 120 minutes, scored the goal, scored the penalty. Nobody played well, including him, but nobody else played well. And then, yes, he gave away the penalty early on. Why is he copping abuse left, right and centre? The guy's been absolutely fantastic for us since he joined. He was our player of the season, the fans' player of the season in the Smith-Gerrard year. He's been, for 20 million quid we signed from Forest, he's been fantastic. And I don't know why, even when we're really, really good and fighting for Champions League, we've still got to have a bloody scapegoat for when there's the odd dodgy performance here and there. It used to be Tyrone Mings. It used to be... I can't even keep track of how many we've had over the years. Stop giving our players abuse all the time. Like, you can have players you don't rate and you can have players you don't like. I don't rate Robin Olsen. I'm terrified that he's going to play a European semi-final against Olympiacos because I don't think he's good enough. But when I'm at Villa Park and he's playing, I'm not going to be shouting abuse at him every time he drops the ball or gives the ball away because it's just counterproductive. Stop abusing our players in the stadium. Sorry, I just needed to say that.
No, but
in terms of a performance, it was absolutely fantastic. I'm going to rate it an A. And Ollie Watkins will be my man of the match because he was unreal and he really deserved a goal for the work rate that he put in. He's leading I don't know what they call it. He's leading the assist charts of the Playmaker Award for the Premier League this year.
Is it called like the Silver Boot or something stupid? Is that whoever comes second in the Golden Boot?
Yeah, I thought it was like the Castrol Playmaker Award.
Okay. It's like a toothpaste, yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, there's a good chance he could win that. We've still got four games to go, I think. I mean, as a striker, if he wins that, bearing in mind some of the amazing creative players. I mean, Kevin De Bruyne has won that award for like the last four or 5 years on the trot, near enough. I know, granted, he's been injured for most of the season, but... Even still, he's got half a chance. I know why he was annoyed he didn't score yesterday because he can see the golden boot within his reach and he could also see that as well. And while I don't think he will win PFA Player of the Year, he should definitely be on the shortlist. And I don't think it could be ruled out that he'd be maybe in the top three for that. He's had a fantastic season and his work rate, even when he's not scoring, even when he's not assisting. Like, the guy doesn't stop running. You wouldn't... Some of our players, John McGinn's another one, like, they just never get tired. They never stop running. They never stop giving 100% for the team. And, yeah, that was it. Ollie Watkins used to be the other scapegoat. And so a lot of... And people are eating their words on him. I always believed in Ollie Watkins. I was always a big fan of him. And I'm so glad that he's hitting the levels that he is now, and especially in an Aston Villa shirt. Housekeeping. I don't think you've got any, have you?
No, not really. No, nothing major. I feel like I've covered a lot of Blues this week already. What's going on your side?
Very, very, very brief. So we announced today that we've got a new front of shirt sponsor for next year. Not that interesting, but it does mean we've got no more BKA, which is good. The downside is that it's another betting sponsor. I think it's a Greek... company called Betano, something like that. But it is the biggest commercial deal in the club's history. So for a 2-year sponsorship, because obviously that's when betting sponsors are getting banned in the UK, it will be 40 million across the two seasons. So 20 million a season. So it's the biggest commercial deal in the club's history. It's very much being marketed, at least in the press release that was put out today by the club, as like, it's like a gaming sponsor, but it's obviously a betting app you play like roulette and, games. Inverted commas for those of you who aren't watching. So, there's nothing that interesting really, but the other interesting thing is on the Betano press release is they've used the new unreleased badge that we've got for next year that is terrible. So,
is this the one that, I mean,
it's like this one, but it's got the line's got terrible drop shadow on it that's going to look awful on the shirts. But yeah, for some reason they've managed to put a press release out with the wrong badge on it. So it's like the worst kept secret at the club at the moment is the new badge. Could we just announce it and get it out of the way?
Cool.
But yeah, that's the housekeeping.
Fair enough. Shall we move into previewing this weekend's games then?
Yeah, single game week, isn't it?
Yes. When do you play next? Do you play Saturday, Sunday?
We play Saturday, I think.
At what time?
Ooh. Oh, no. Do we play Saturday? Yeah, we're late. We play Chelsea at like 8 o'clock in the evening or something.
Cool. We'll start with Blues then, because we play first. We're playing Saturday at 3 o'clock. This is our penultimate game of the season, which is pretty mad to think. Game 45 of 46, and it is Huddersfield away. I said last week this will probably be the biggest Blues game in 3 or 4 years, and it is, man. It is huge, 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 huge. It's the Survival Saturday before Survival Saturday. It's 22nd against 23rd. Huddersfield are really bad. They are... I said that about Rotherham last week, though. I said it earlier in this podcast about Rotherham. Huddersfield are 23rd. They've only won 9 games all season. But what's mad is I think they've only lost 18. We've lost 22. I'm saying Huddersfield are really bad. I think we're a point above them. That's the state of play. Maybe 2 points above them. 2 points, I think. They lost 4-0 at home to Swansea at the weekend, although they did beat Millwall the week before that. Oh, no, sorry. They lost to Preston 4-1 the week before that, and then I think they beat Millwall the week before that. So they've conceded 4 in each of their last two games. They've got a really poor defence, but they are capable of just pulling a win out of anywhere. And they're going to be going for us as well, you know, like, because they're going to see us as their last chance to get out of it. Because I think they've got Ipswich in their last game as well, which you don't see them getting any points there. So really, it's their last chance probably to pick up some points. Honestly, our away form is so bad this year. We've won 3 away games all year. Although we did batter Huddersfield in the reverse leg. We beat them 4-1 at St Andrews. Probably the worst team to come to St Andrews this season. It's weird. I actually think we're more likely to get something against Norwich in the last game with like a full St Andrews there, which is mental because Norwich are 6th in the league.
There's always some weird results on the final day as well.
Yeah, I genuinely think the last day is going to be one of them mad, like, you know, on the radios, you know, like trying to see what's going on in the other game and so on. I think we'll nick it 1-0, but I actually wouldn't be shocked if we drew it and then we're relying on the Norwich game and then got what we needed there. And that's not because Huddersfield are good, because they're not, but like we just summed it up perfectly the last couple of weeks. We smashed Coventry the week before at home in front of nearly a full house, and then we blew it against Rotherham away. Our away record gives me no... Well, I don't think we've won an away game since January. I think it's January against Stoke. Mowbray just gone in. I'll say 1-0, but it's tentative, yeah. What about you? You're playing on Sunday.
I was just going to mention on your game, because obviously it's the like definition of a six-pointer. Mm. A win for either team gives them a very good chance of staying up. A draw does not help either of you.
No, and I think if we win, Huddersfield can't finish above us then.
Yeah.
And I think it might... If we win, they're basically down.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that might actually be them finished off then, if we win. Something to point out, if it does come to goal difference between us, Sheffield Wednesday and Huddersfield, we're in by far the strongest position. So if we get level on points with them, that at least would probably be enough.
For us, we've got Chelsea on the 8 o'clock. I think I said last week we played 2 games before Tottenham play again. I actually think I was wrong. I think we play 3 times before they play again. So it's a huge opportunity for us to keep extending the gap. Obviously, Chelsea are not great. I think it's fair to say they have improved and they're capable of pulling a result out of kind of nowhere. It does look like they are going to finish in the top half a bit disappointingly now, because it looked for a long time they were going to finish in the bottom half 2 years in a row. And having grown up with knowing quite a few Chelsea fans in Birmingham, it's quite nice seeing them suffer at the moment.
Oh, for sure.
But they did come to Villa Park in the FA Cup and kind of roll us over in the fourth round replay. So it won't be easy. We'll be relatively well rested. you'd think. The players have had today, and they got, well, they got Monday and Tuesday off, depending on when you're listening and watching. Villa Park under the lights is always special. I think it's the penultimate home game of the year. I think we'll win. I think we'll win 3-1 because Cole Palmer will probably score a penalty. But I think it could be close. It could be a good game. You just don't know what sort of, you don't know what Chelsea are going to turn up. You know, they played pretty well against Manchester City in the FA Cup the other day and probably should have won, but didn't take the chances. Or you could get the Chelsea that like rock up and get rolled over, you know, can't beat Burnley and Sheffield United. So, but no, I do think we'll have enough to beat them. They haven't really got a lot to play for. You know, they're like hoping to get in the Conference League for next year. That's how the mighty have fallen.
How the mighty have fallen, yes. I remember when they got snobby about winning the Europa League under Rafa Benitez.
Yeah.
But they love that now. And Maurizio Sarri, do you remember how they hounded him out? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, but they'd take them days back now.
Definitely. But yeah, I think we'll win. And it's, as I said, we've got a huge opportunity to get 9 points clear of Spurs. And while they'll have the games in hand, that's still that put the if we can win the three games, we've won one of them already, that puts a lot of pressure on them to win the games in hand. And I think if we beat Chelsea, the lowest we can finish is fifth in the league, which will be the highest finish I can remember us ever having in the Premier League.
Gosh, fair enough, man. On that note, shall we call it? Cool. Yeah,
I think
so
we should,
very,
yeah.
Very contrasting. Very contrasting fortunes in the second city this week then. Let's hope the playing field's been levelled somewhat this time next week in terms of our respective happiness. Let's hope, who knows? Well, I think we'll have a very clear picture of what direction each team's heading in this time next week. Going back to the Chelsea thing as well, sorry, the games in hand over Spurs, yeah, you'd definitely rather have the points on the board as well rather than the games in hand. Cool, so on that note, all that's left to say is happy 60th birthday to Cal's dad. A bit belated, but you said it was his 60th birthday this weekend? This weekend? Last weekend?
Just gone, yeah.
Just gone. Happy 60th birthday to Dave anyway. And on that note, we will, we'll call it there. So make sure you follow us on all our socials. Second City Pod, that's 2ND City Pod. We're on TikTok and what else are we on? Twitter we're on as well.
Twitter.
No. Yeah, Twitter, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. We will get on Instagram, I promise,
yeah,
at some point.
Then. We will do,
but yeah, thank you as well for 1,000 audio downloads across the season so far. So that's a nice little milestone that we can tick off the list. So thank you once again for all your support. The support in the last video was great.
Yeah.
Leave a like, subscribe on whether you're on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, or whatever. 5-star reviews on audio as well. And yeah, we'll see you next week for what will be a very pivotal episode in this season. So I'll see you then, Dan, and up the Villa.
See you then. Shit on the Villa. Keep right on. See you next time.